Welcome back, listeners. Today we have a tennis legend with us, the incredible Jessica Steck. From lighting up the International Tennis Federation women's circuit to acing first round double matches in all four Grand Slam events, Jessica's journey in the world of tennis has been nothing short of spectacular. Today, she's going to take us behind the scenes, reminiscing about iconic tournaments like Wimbledon and the U.S. Open, sharing secrets on how she balanced the rigorous demands of sport with self-care, and diving deep into some of her most challenging matches. We'll also delve into some hot topics like the rise of transgender athletes in women's sports and the evolution of tennis with advancements in sports science and technology. So grab your headphones, find a cozy spot, and get ready for a smashing episode with Jessica Steck.
You know, welcome to the Cracking Backs podcast with our lovely guest, professional. I don't care if you're your ex or your current, you're once a professional athlete, you're always a professional athlete in my book, Jessica, South African pro tennis player. And you had a remarkable career, which we're going to go into, but we're really, really excited to have you on your show. Welcome.
Oh, well, thank you. It's an honor to be here with you.
Oh, thank you.
So thanks for having me.
It's great to see you, Jessica. You had a really successful career on the ITF women's circuit, and Wimbledon, the French Open, the Australian Open, the U.S. Open, and you know these are iconic tournaments. What is one like standout moment that you will never forget for the rest of your life competing during competition in these events?
Oh, I think there are a few standout moments. Probably winning the U.S. Open junior doubles was kind of like a standout moment, just because it happened at the same time that the Bryan brothers won their first Grand Slam event. So, and we were actually very close from the age of 13 onwards. So we grew up together. So that was kind of special. And then, of course, probably beating Anna Kournikova in the U.S. Open Juniors. That was rather special in some ways. You know, a lot of what happened in the past, you kind of at the time took it for granted. But now you look back and think how fortunate you were.
So let me, that moment, though. You know, I'm always fascinated by that absolute moment where you realize that next point, boom, is yours. You win the match, you win the tournament, you win the game. I mean, you know, how did that change your life? Like, how does that shape your life and maybe everything that follows what you do?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I guess they say, pressure is a privilege. It's kind of privilege. Like, you know, there's such highs, but then such lows. Yeah. So it's kind of balancing, you know, knowing that, you know, when there are periods of lows, the highs are coming, you know, and that just, you know, comes with your work ethic and, you know, being in the best possible, being prepared, basically. But yes, I mean, so many things can change in a split second. Yeah. So it's certainly a rush of adrenaline, but you've got to stay in the moment. You know, you can't be thinking about the past, you know, what happened. As they say, that's why the rear view mirror is so small and the windshield so large. You've got to keep looking forward.
Yeah. Isn't that great? I love that pressure is a privilege. That's cool.
I like that too. Yeah.
So, you know, winning first round doubles matches in all four Grand Slam events is pretty impressive. You know, is there a difference in preparation? And I love the to know what goes through the mind. You know, what is required to handle this level of tournament?
Yes. Well, I guess basically being growing up competing since the age of like 8 years old, I mean, it's almost ingrained in you that, you know, so much of it is mental. It's probably 95% of it is mental. And it's just staying focused and staying positive. That's a huge, and I think especially nowadays, the mental aspect is so important. And it's just having a routine, knowing what works for each individual.
Is it something you realize, you know, it seems like the mental game has really become more important as the years and the decades move on. People have really underestimated the mental aspect of it. Do you see that as a difference? Like, you said it's more there's so much mental aspect to the game. Has it become more recognized?
Most definitely. I mean, if I look back, that's something I would have done differently, and actually more so hired a psychologist rather than a coach. You know, because everyone can hit a forehand and backhand. It's basically just the mental side of it and knowing that you can do it. And for example, I played Serena Williams out in Indian Wells, and you know, I mean, she sort of crushed me the first set, and the second set I was actually serving for the set at 5-4, and immediately I sort of thought, gosh, I shouldn't be doing this. And I mean, and then of course I lost, you know, it was over before I knew it. But that just shows, if I could go back in time, I could think, you know, if you're right there in it, you know, you've got to believe in yourself.
Wow.
So it's a lot of it's just trusting, you know, just knowing you can do it. You know, if you have a little bit of doubt that comes in your mind, then you might as well shake hands.
Wow.
You know,
what would you have said to yourself back then that you understand now at that given moment where you felt that, wow, could I actually beat her? You know, and then you have that self-doubt. I mean, that's hard to change that when that tape runs through your head. What would you do different?
Oh, yes. I would have just I would have thought, you know, this is the score, and not being thinking who she is. You know, you've got to put everything out of your mind, all those distractions, you've got to just push them out. You know, and just stay focused on the next point, you know, just stay in the moment.
She's a very imposing athlete. You know, she hits a ball strong. She has that grunt. And I mean, Indian Wells is in my area. I was not too far from there. And what would you, if you were her coach, if you were your mental coach going back then, similar to what Dr. Spencer just said, how would you attack? Because you're not going to beat someone like that physically, because she's so imposingly strong. So you have to beat her mentally. What would be your strategy?
Yes. Well, I think at that time, because this was so long ago, basically, I would have moved her more, you know, kept her on the run, and just, you know, basically just played my own game. But gone into it with more of a positive mindset, not being so thinking, gosh, you know, she's so intimidating, which sure, you know, I mean, she was, but that's all, and that's confidence too. And a lot of it is, you know, it's you are what you think.
It's interesting, you know, to understand, you know, it's easy to say, be positive. Don't let that negative stuff get in your head. You know, it's easy to say that, but it takes conditioning for your brain as well as conditioning for your body to, you know, have endurance and have strength and have technique and all that. It's, you know, I think the mental game is really underrated, and some of us take it for granted. Do you feel that you would have to train your brain as well?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, it's kind of like training a muscle, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. you've got to keep on working at it.
Yeah.
You know, and as they say, but you know, you need to work on something, 10,000 hours to perfect something. Yeah. So it's almost like it just becomes second nature. But certainly training the brain, I mean, and just in general, just in life,
right,
you know, is huge.
So let's move away from the mental aspect and talk about the physical aspect of the, you know, the kind of demands that are out there on a professional tennis player. You know, whether, you know, it's, you know, in the midst of the battle of the competition or anything, you know, injuries are hard to prevent. And now we understand recovery and things like that more than ever before. What would you have done different back then compared to?
Yes. Now? There's a lot I would have done differently. And I think being a successful junior and probably, you know, sort of in the top 10 in the, you know, junior ITF player in the world in singles, I think I certainly practiced way too much, you know, hitting thousands of forehands and backhands, where really that was spending 5 hours on the tennis court every day. You know, that was unnecessary. I think these days, you know, you've got to scale that way back and play more matches. And because that's basically, I mean, you know, you can be a great person who can just hit cross courts all day, but that's fine for, it'll take you to a certain point, but then, you know, it's no point in just doing that hour, you know, thousands of hours. So that, I think, wore my body down. And then a lot of it's luck too, and it's genes. Because, you know, I was 127 in the world in singles and playing in the finals of a big tournament out west, and went up for an overhead and came down and broke my wrist. So that put me out for a year. And so, you know, that was unfortunate, because, you know, that kind of, I think my confidence went down, and then after that came back playing more doubles. And then I had shoulder issues. So, you know, that was kind of like an unfortunate turning point.
Hey, you know, Jessica, I want to stay on the, I know Dr. Terry's going to appreciate this, but I want to stay on what you just said and highlight it. And that is, because we get these patients that come in, these kids, these teenagers, and their parents and their coaches have them practicing twice a day, hours each time. And they don't mention that they have competition during the weekends. So they're playing hard 7 days a week. So can you please elaborate on what you just said about, you know, duration and timing? Right? Right, Dr. Terry?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's way too much. So by the time you're 18, it's like your body's finished. Mm-hmm. Yes. So and recovery is actually even more important, or as important as the time spent on on the court. So basically, by the time the weekend comes, their legs are just heavy, and they've got nothing left. Yeah, so it's and then that is the trouble I see with juniors, even here in Florida. Mm-hmm. It's like the parents just want to see them busy, just hitting thousands of balls. And I'm just shaking my head, thinking, you know, that's not going to do it. And then, first of all, they've got to enjoy it. Mm. You know, half of the time, you know, it's got to be the person's dream. Can't be the parent's dream. Mm. You know, because if you don't enjoy it, you'll only go so far. So, you know, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. How do you handle, like, if you're training and coaching today, and it's hard to argue with you because you've been at the highest level, but how do you handle a parent or another coach if you're working with them who's got this hot junior who's 10, 11, 12, 13, who's crushing everything, and all the parent is focused on is getting this kid a scholarship to a D1 school, and they just say they have to outwork everybody. They have to outwork everybody. How do you handle that obstacle? Because, you know, I'm at a school that's a D1 school that's very well known for tennis. I'm at Pepperdine, and we've won nationals mm-hmm. before. And I've had kids that by the time they hit their junior year, when they're looking at going pro, they're done, you know. But yes. The argument was they had to work hard to even get there in the first place. How do you find that balance?
Yeah, so, you know, so many things have to work together. You know, first you've got to have the talent. You know, you've got to have the mental aspect of it, and then the perseverance and the drive. So, you know, the chances of getting that scholarship it's so slim. So you've got to put everything into perspective, and for that junior, they've got to have a fulfilling, you know, life, and it can't just be focused on sports, because, you know, that's a huge amount of pressure that you're putting on that player. And then, yeah, sure, they can get a shoulder injury, and then that's kind of their parents have spent so much money training. On all the training, they might as well have just, you know, they could just pay to go and just study at the college. So yeah. It's a delicate subject with parents, because, you know, often they're kind of in denial and they don't want to hear that.
Have you ever broached the subject? It's better to win later than earlier. You know, it's almost like, do you want, you know, do you ever put it to the parents and going, well, do you want your child to be a 15-year-old star or a 20-year-old star? You know, do you ever put it that way and just say, pick one? You know, it's better to, you know, do you want them to win early, or do you want them to win late? It's better to lose early than lose late. You know, have those conversations?
Yes, most definitely. And also, you know, I mean, if they're playing 5 hours a day when they're 11, I mean, naturally they're going to be burnt out. And by the time they get to high school, they probably won't even want to see a tennis court. So if you've got to it's got to be slow and steady. You know, you can't just cram it all in. And tennis players these days are peaking at a later age, where before it was 16, 17, but now it's, you know, it's late 20s, in 30s, you know, even 40s. I mean, if I look at Wozniacki coming back just now during the US Open and winning a couple of rounds after having two children, that just shows, I think we're going to see more and more of that.
Hey, Jessica, I want to go back to this training perspective that you're talking about. I think it's very important. And yes, we all agree that these kids are overtraining based on the pressure the parents or the coaches give. But can you give us an actual number or time? Like, what would, if you were coaching a kid that you saw was overtraining, you know, doing the 7 day a week thing twice a day each day, how would you change that? So our listeners and viewers can adopt some of your principles.
Oh, yes. So basically, you know, I mean, it depends on their talent, and, you know, each individual is different, but I would say no more than 2 hours a day, you know, to be practicing.
Nice.
I mean, anything over that is just, it's going to be, it's not going to be very productive.
Good.
And, you know, and then, you know, deal more with, you know, strengthening, like with bands and,
fantastic.
You know, getting into more preventative, training. So off the court is as important than on the court, you know.
How about recovery stuff?
And then recovery is huge.
Like what?
Yes. And then
what would you do? And what would you tell
them? Resting.
What's that?
Well, even just resting, yeah. You know, I mean, and yeah, and having a day off, you know, just actually listening to your body, but, you know, not, you can't force anything.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, a parent doesn't know how that junior, how their, you know, son or daughter feels at the time. You know, they're just probably saying, oh, well, just keep going. You know, like that's going to get you in better shape. But it's counterproductive. And then you're just getting into bad habits and you're just trying to survive.
Love it. Love it. Thank you. Thank you for giving people a recipe, because Dr. Terry and I, we might discuss it all day long, but it's hard to, when we're not at your level, you know, it's, you know, in one ear, out the other.
Yes.
So let's go with that. I want to ask you about these kids at the young age, some of the pros and cons, what they go through, the risks, the knee injuries, the menstrual cycle problems that these kids might be having. And, you know, how they may affect these athletes. What have you seen over the years, or maybe experienced yourself when you're pushing it to the limit?
Yes, basically, you know, it's really, a lot of it's who you surround yourself with and having the right coaches, the right trainers, you know, the right team, basically, to steer you in the right direction. You know, I was fortunately very disciplined with, you know, diet and training and sleep. You know, there's so many aspects that come into play, you know, to be able to perform at such a high level. So a lot of it is who you surround yourself with, you know, having the right entourage, and just, you know, you can't force anything.
So, okay, that's important, but I want to really get specific, because these kids might think that they are surrounded by the right folks, the right people, the right team. And I have seen it. Dr. Terry has seen it. You know, they'll hire a coach, and we've seen it at the level of professional, you know, other sports, whether it be football or motocross or whatever it might, surfing, whatever it might be. And the off-season training, some of these coaches want to prove themselves, and they will drill these kids into the ground, and they go, "Oh, that was a good workout." And this kid's like barely walking off the floor. So, female athletes, you know, what have you seen? Being that maybe, you know, you've coached, you know, some kids, and have you seen any of these problems come up?
Oh, certainly. And I mean, I've seen coaches that, you know, are sadly in it for, you know, the financial reasons. So they are like saying, okay, no, we've got to be on the court for 4 hours a day. And I'm thinking, you know,
yeah.
I mean, this isn't a factory. So that's where it's also, it's sad to see where, you know, you hope that they have the best interests of the athlete at heart. And sometimes I wonder if they're not just thinking of their own pocket.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Have you seen female athletes, their cycles, their menstrual cycles get interrupted because of the stress or losing weight or just being run down in general?
Oh yeah. Oh yes. Yes. Most definitely. And then, you know, oh gosh, you know, it's such a tricky age as it is, you know, with, you know, weight and you know, and that's also who you surround yourself with too. They can either, you know, make it or break it, you know, but that's also been an issue with a lot of young female tennis players. You know, just eating disorders, which is very sad.
Yeah. The eating disorders. I mean, part of recovery is good nutrition.
Yes.
And at your point in life right now versus the way it was back then, nutrition is much more recognized. For the females out there that you could relate to or they could relate to you, what was the difference in nutrition back then for you versus today? And what would you give as advice to these kids?
Yes. So basically, well, during my day, so much of it was like all carbohydrates. You know, it was so different back then. Where right now, I think just a balance, you know, a good balanced diet is the way to go. And obviously, you know, the sugar levels in the food here in the States is, you know, it's amazing. I mean, I go to South Africa and even just for something as simple as peanut butter is so sweet here and in Europe and South Africa, it tastes totally different.
Really?
I mean, like there's no sugar. Yeah, so we've just become accustomed to, you know, an unfortunate, you know, a lot of unfortunate foods, and so that's, you know, because a lot of it is maintaining your sugar levels. So I think, and then if when you're on the road, it's even harder because you've got to, you know, you can't quite control what, you know, because you're eating out a lot. You've just got to be wise and have, and hopefully have good people, you know, educating you, a person on what, you know, as far as diet goes, you know.
I know you're not a nutritionist, but you're sharp enough to know what works. When you say a balanced diet, what would that look like for someone who's training through the week for you?
Yes. So basically, I mean, you know, I mean, breakfast is extremely important. So, you know, it would be oatmeal or, you know, a boiled egg, you know, I mean, just everything. I think really basically everything in moderation and then, you know, obviously eating smaller, but more frequent meals per day. And I mean, like I was someone who could actually have a meal and go right out and play a match, where, you know, some people just can't do that. So, you know, in that way, everyone is different. But then as far as sort of the intake of carbohydrates, I'd think to myself, well, what am I going to be doing the next 3 hours? Well, if it's sleeping, you know, I'm not going to be having a huge bowl of pasta because I don't need the energy to, you know, to sleep. But so it's basically just, you know, just healthy eating, you know, which is, you know, I think when you start cutting out, you know, like cutting out things, that's where it can get, you know, that's never very wise, in my opinion.
That's a really good point about eating a big meal, which America tends to do the big meal at the end of the day, and it will definitely have an effect on your ability to have a sound sleep because your body's too busy digesting versus, you know, the blood should be in the brain and in the muscles healing them. But so that I just want to highlight that point that you just made. So
that's what I've been doing wrong. That's why I have no blood in my brain at all, right?
I didn't say anything about that.
Damn it. Now I know.
Well, yeah. It's probably why I'm losing my hair here. But anyway. Hey, Jess, I'm going to ask you a very a hot question right now about transgender athletes in sports.
Yes.
Especially in the world of women's sports. I want to know how you how you think and how you would feel and prepare if you were to compete against a transgender athlete during your career.
Well, well, I think I'd feel as despondent as I did walking onto the court playing Serena Williams. So, and that probably would stay the same. I don't think I would. I think that's how I would feel. I think there's no way. I mean, we. It's just. I mean, that's hideous. Yeah. I mean, now there's no way. You know, I can compete with a male.
Yeah.
You know.
It's crazy.
It's just physically, it's not.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not, I wouldn't even go down there because, you know, I mean, it's just not, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Yes. So you just can't compare the strength, you know, and when it comes to the serve, I think, you know, it's, I'll stick to just, you know, playing female athletes. Yeah, no, I think it's.
Well, there is just an article that I saw 2 days ago about a transgender rugby player was playing.
Oh, God.
And injured some of the opponents' bet because of the strength difference. And it's just like. First of all, I mean, there's so many comments that I would want to make, but it's a whole nother. That's a whole nother interview. Martina just had recently been very outspoken about her feelings against transgender athletes in women's tennis. You know, it just it wouldn't make any sense. So
It's kind of sad that's where we're going.
Yeah,
but. Well, I mean, hopefully not, but I think that's unfortunate.
So you're starting to see, unfortunately, for women who have been trained since they were 6, 7, 8, like you, and now you're starting to see some of this. You're starting to see, in fact, we talked about this at our training room today, you're starting to see some of these males that couldn't even make the first round are now transitioning and now they're wiping out the females to become number one. if we see this trend going, in your opinion, from a pro female athlete, because I can talk about it from my guy, Dr. Spencer can talk about it from my guy, but from your position, your opinion, I'm not asking anything else, but your opinion, what needs to change and be addressed, and how do you see it being handled?
Gosh, well, I almost just think you almost have to nip it in the bud. And because otherwise, it's just going to become, it's just going to get out of hand, I'd say. I think it's women should play against women and men should play against men. If I was a male, I wouldn't find it all that rewarding to go out and, beat some lady or, a female and think, gosh, well, I just went up in the rankings. I mean, it's almost you're just sort of cheating yourself.
Right. Do you ever see them down the road maybe creating a separate, almost like a separate category? Yeah, or do you see it being nipped in the bud altogether?
Oh, I would hope, that they'd just, sort of put an end to it. I mean, I would save that for, playing recreational club, tennis, and hopefully we won't get there.
There you go.
Okay, Jessica, we are going to start one of our favorite segments of our program called the Rapid Fire Questions. I'm going to throw out five questions one at a time, and you can answer them as briefly as possible. But I got to tell you, we end up making it longer than usual. So yes. No pressure, but that's a privilege, yep. Isn't it?
That's right.
Exactly. All right. Here we go. Jessica, tennis can have its moments of humor. Can you recall any funny or unusual incidents that happened during your competitions?
Jeepers. Gosh, I wish there were a lot of moments of humor. Oh, goodness. Wow, that's a good question. I think.
Want me to come back to it?
yes. Well, yes, you can come back to.
All right. How about if I change it around? You ready?
Yes.
They can also have their moments of absolute loss of control, anger, pissed off, nastiness. Do you remember ever feeling that way?
Oh, well, yes, oh. Yes. This was a rather
common,
interesting story. And this was actually playing Anna Kournikova at the US Open. It was in the second set, she was serving, and I was up 5-3, and it was going deuce ad, and it was on a deuce point. I missed the return of serve into the net, and I told the little ball boy to like I've got this ball, and I smashed the ball like to the back fence, and it actually hit the line judge. Unfortunately, I mean, it wasn't that hard, but generally you're actually automatically, you're out of the tournament. I mean, you basically, that's it. So, but because I wasn't facing the line judge, they made an exception. So, I just got a warning. But I mean, yeah, that was a bit of a stressful moment.
You remember that so well. That's funny.
Yes, yes.
That's great. Yeah.
Because I thought, gosh, you know, to be disqualified from something that was so, you know, it can happen so quickly.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was, you know, but generally you've got to sort of be like you're acting. You know, you can't show your emotion. But sometimes that's hard to do.
How did John McEnroe get away with it all the time? He was always yelling. Yeah.
He was actually quite good with being able to. He actually got it out of his system, and then he could regroup and refocus. Where if you see juniors now, they go ballistic, and then they lose the next 6 points because of that one mistake. Okay. So it's counterproductive.
Okay. Yeah. Question number two, keeping on that same premise that you just ended with.
Yes.
Best tip or strategy that you find to use to maintain your mental resilience during a high-pressure match?
Oh, it's just to stay in the moment and don't think about the past or the future. You know, just
is that hard to do?
It can be hard to do, but you just have to do it.
Mm. It's part of the training, you know, part of the mental training.
Because you can only control right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Question number three: if you could have a superpower, what would you choose and why?
Gosh! Oh, wow. That would be, probably. Oh my! I mean, I think just probably being able to just move on and kind of not let anything bother you, you know, whether. What people, you know, say, or, you know, just to continue, you know, don't let all the negative influences from the outside sort of get to you.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Can't let it bother you. Right.
No.
All right. Question number four. One tip you learned as an international tennis player that you wish you had when you first started?
Well, I'd say a tip would be that, you know, life is full of highs and lows, and it's really how you get over those low moments and how you recover. I mean, that's sort of the key to life, because, you know, everyone's going to have disappointments, but, you know, it's how you deal with them.
Yeah.
So that's
right. Question number five. And I may come back to the original question about, you know, a momentous occasion, but let's go with question number five. What was the worst advice you ever got, that, you know, when you think about it, you probably roll your eyes to this day and go, what was I thinking?
The worst advice, gosh. it's a good thing that I can't actually
remember that one. Right.
Something that would be kind of sad. You know, I think that's where you've just got to trust your gut feeling, you know, and if something doesn't feel right, you know, you've got to listen to your gut, because most of the time it's not right. You know, what your gut's telling you is correct. Yes. But fortunately, I can't think of anything, you know, that prey, you know.
Maybe it's practicing 6 hours a day.
Well, maybe that's right. So that was my whole life then. That was bad advice for 15 years.
Right. Yes. Right.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, so that sums it all up. Yeah. Yes. No.
Right.
There we go. That's it.
That, you know, that's probably the most obvious thing that you would easily overlook. One of the worst things.
Yeah, and thinking that it's in the best of intentions. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, right. I should be practicing 5 hours a day. Right. Yes, yes. So that was a huge piece of it of unfortunate advice.
Right.
Yes, but
all right. So
can only go forward.
What's that?
Yeah.
Can only go forward. Yes.
Yeah.
So so now I'll do a 30-minute run instead of a 45-minute run later.
There you go.
Yes.
All right. Did you think of a momentous occasion for yourself? Something that that was probably one of the most wonderful or funny moments for you. One of the most humorous or entertaining moments.
Gosh, you know, I wish I could remember something that was, you know, sort of funny. I mean, there were so many unique adventures. I mean, maybe it was flying into Egypt and going, you know, checking in at the hotel and going outside of the hotel, trying to find a restaurant and asking these people who couldn't speak English, like, where is a restaurant? And one lady thought I was some sort of homeless person and told me to – she thought I was sort of a beggar, and this is in the middle of Cairo.
Yeah.
And I just thought, my gosh. So, I mean, there are many, you know, many just interesting – many unique situations.
That's cool.
You know, so it's certainly I could – you know, talk for hours about that. Yeah.
So I'm gonna have a play on words. You said going, you know, flying into Cairo. Speaking of Cairo, did you have access to chiropractors during your during your competitions?
Yes.
Really? Yeah. Back then,
yes. Yes, I did. And actually, they were a huge help.
Oh.
I must say. To find, you know, the best, obviously, like, you know, like both of you, you know, that's important, but sure, that makes a huge, you know, if it's, you know, massage, chiropractic, I mean, you know, that's part of the whole picture. You know, so you've got to incorporate so much.
Yeah. Any other specialized care back then that, you know, whether it be acupuncture or dry needling, did they do any of that back then?
You know, in my day, no dry needling. Yeah. That was probably coming.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was kind of the basics. But certainly, prevention is hugely important.
Ah, love that. That is very important nowadays. So, looking back at your journey, what was one piece of advice you'd give to young athletes that are aspiring to make it a profession, you know, make it to the professional level like you did? Anything that you would share?
Oh, I would say first of all, you've got to love it, and it's got to be your dream. And then just persevere, and it takes a lot of sacrifice, a lot of dedication, and you know, and just perseverance, you know, and just never give up, and you know, anything can, you know, you can I mean, you can achieve whatever, you know, everything. You can achieve whatever you aspire to. So just, you got to keep on going forward.
Yeah. Oh, Jess, I really appreciate the wisdom from someone that lived it, breathed it, you know, and made the mistakes and had the successes. And, you know, thank you for sharing your inspiring story and your insights into your career and things that our listeners can, not only the healthcare providers that are listening can use that to empower their patients, but also the listeners that are involved in sports and athletics that can embrace what you share. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, well, my pleasure. My pleasure. And so thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Terry, anything else?
You are wonderful, and I appreciate it. And I just love sitting back, listening to your accent. It brings back a lot of memories when I was in your country. But thank you for all the hard work. And yeah, you guys were pioneers back then. It's something that the young women of today need to aspire to and learn from. So thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure, Mr. Terry.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Cracking Backs podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at Cracking Backs Podcast. Catch new episodes every Monday. See you next time.